happy, like, pre-birthday.
Oh, thank you. That's my first question for this very impromptu, meandering podcast we're about to have is, what do you want to get me for my birthday?
What do I want to get you for your birthday?
What movie gift do you want to get me?
Oh, my God. You deserve so much. I mean...
That's what I say.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I want to get you a night at the Moulin Rouge and a pig who thinks he's a sheepdog and, like, teleportation back to the set for Truth or Dare. I think you'd have a great time there.
Oh, yes. Yes. That one works for me as well. That might be the first choice.
I'll send this question back. What do you want me to get you for your birthday?
Well, I mean, you came up with better ideas than I would have. This is going to be weird, but I would have liked to have been on the set when Miss Piggy and Joan Rivers were doing each other's makeup in Muppets Take Manhattan.
See, every time I think you're going to go right, you go left. I would never in 100 guesses have come up with that.
That would have been one. And since we're about to do the 1994 SmackDown coming up, listeners, I definitely would have liked to have followed Juliette Lewis around all that year.
Oh, my
as
God.
As frightening as that might have been.
That would have been some intense times. It's not clear to me if we were already in Scientology, but even if that was not on the game board, there was plenty happening.
Yes. But we can talk about 1994 later.
Can I ask one 1994 question?
Oh, that will sure.
Spoiler at all. So, setting completely aside the nominated movies, whenever I do one of these with you, I start thinking about the movies from that year that I think it's ridiculous that I haven't re-seen them in such a long time. Mm-hmm. So do you have those for 1994 that you feel like you have to revisit?
Of my like top 10 from 1994, the only ones I've seen in the past few years are Bullets Over Broadway and Queen Margot.
Uh-huh. It's pretty gay. That's a pretty gay admission.
Well, she's not that kind of queen.
Yeah, but you feel like she could thrive as such.
I mean, there is a 94, I think, quiz show.
Mm.
I have not seen that since that year. And Chungking Express, that's another one that I could definitely do with a sort of memory jog on it.
But more of all that to follow.
So... I'm Nathaniel, and I'm talking to Nick.
And I'm talking back to Nathaniel. We're answering each other's prompts.
And this may have been a confession. This is the first podcast we've ever recorded where I'm maybe a little bit intoxicated.
I like the clinking of the ice that I'm picking up every now and then. And there have already been some like pregnant pauses while something swirls in a tumbler, I feel.
Well... So listeners know we almost always record these first thing in the morning, like genuinely roll out of bed, record them. But it is 11 p.m. at night, and I'm having a second cocktail.
I love it. This is the way to get through 2018.
That's right. So we haven't talked in so long, so... We haven't really talked about 2018 movies.
I think that's true, and there's so many that I think I have a sense of like your reactions to them, but you know, like you never know when you're psyching yourself out. I think I saw your tweet the other day responding to Rob Watson, and I'm trying to remember. I know that Western was one of your three favorites so far this year. I think Isle of Dogs was.
Yes.
Was the other one Black Panther?
No, the other one was... Oh, We the Animals.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know what that is.
Which hasn't come out yet. It comes out okay. In August.
You live in the future.
I time travel. Thanks to the magic of film festivals.
And the cocktails.
Because, as you know, Western we actually saw last year.
Together.
Yes, at the Toronto Film Festival.
And boy, were we bowled over.
Yes, we were. And then I also like Black Panther, like everybody does. And Tully, I'm very excited about.
Maybe we can talk about that one
But,
because I love it so much as well.
well, that's, I had no idea what you think of it. I just was so floored that they pulled it off.
Totally.
Because I didn't know where it was going, because I wisely did not read any reviews.
Same.
And I was like, this is a really interesting movie in that it seems to be just content to watch someone sort of live her life. And then it takes this third act turn that I understand is polarizing, but I'm not sure why, because I think it's genius.
Totally. I'm just gonna I'm gonna bitch and say that I hadn't read anything either until I saw it, and then came home and read the highly mixed reviews. And more than almost any movie recently I can think of, I felt like I was reading many reviews where I felt like, wait, but do you even understand what happened in it? Like, do you know what was going on? Like, there were just these so quick dismissals, or maybe a sense that that twist was nothing but a twist instead of being completely linked to everything else the movie was already about.
Well, that's the thing. It's one of these. Okay, even if you want to say it's a twist,
Yeah.
even if you view it as a twist, it is a twist in the sense of like a sixth sense twist, where if you go back, it is completely clear.
Yes.
So, in that sense, it's not a twist at all because it's totally organic to the piece.
Completely
It's
agree.
not a pull the rug out from under you, even though I was surprised.
Yep. Ditto all of that.
And can we just talk about Charlize Theron being amazing?
So great in it. Mackenzie Davis also so great in it.
She has
What a hard part to play.
a very tricky part to play. I think we probably discussed on the podcast at some point about some performance that it's very hard to play ideas rather than characters.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what Mackenzie's pulling off.
Yep.
And yeah.
While also managing to make it a character.
Well, what?
And while also managing to make it a character, for
Yeah.
sure.
Yes.
And I thought Ron Livingston was doing what the movie needed him to do for about half of it, and then there's this close-up on him when he's at the in-laws' kid's birthday party, and he's deciding whether or not to tell his brother-in-law, who he doesn't even like, about something pretty intense that happened the night before. And then he has, I mean, it's not birth, like, let's all calm down. But he has this amazing silent close-up of just mixed emotions while he's like, do I tell him? Do I not tell him? Why would I even tell him? What happened last night? Why am I even considering this? And like, all of a sudden, it's like a super interesting performance. And I felt like in the same way that like Juno figured out how to like turn Jason Bateman on at exactly the right time, like
Yes.
that happened again. As also with Juno, which I was not thinking about during the movie at all, but then afterward felt like, okay, two movies about pregnancy that had completely new things to say about it than I've seen before and different from each other. Like two movies about women of different generations who totally come to understand that they are each other's ally, but it's complicated. So great. Like, she's just so good at this stuff.
Yeah, it's such a singular voice, too. Nobody else is writing scripts like she does.
I agree. And people just hate her for it.
Yeah. Well, time will out all of the brilliance.
Hope so. It's sad to see that movie chugging along at like $19 million at the box office. Not that that's everything, but.
Yeah, but at least when I went, which was very recently, I am ashamed to say I waited and waited. I don't know why. The crowd seemed to be with it. Like there was a lot of laughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of like conversations. I didn't really catch them. I wanted to, but I could tell people were talking about it as they were leaving.
Yeah. How
As
could you?
opposed to, what should we eat?
Right. Or like, why didn't Hawkeye do anything again? Speaking of rewatching, that's a movie I really want to see again before it leaves the theater, although I'm sure time is running out.
Yeah, who knows, it might move up my charts as the year progresses. The other movie I'm sort of dying to know what you think of, which I don't know, is Disobedience.
So do you remember at TIFF last year when I had to leave to go to a funeral and then got on a bus for 17 hours to come back for like the last day? And like, that was because...
Yes, listeners, this is Nick's crazy life.
I did not want to miss Disobedience. And it's like, I'll go through customs on a Greyhound. I'll let this man tell me about the Bible for like a 9-hour stretch. Yes. Which is actually kind of... To be leaving a funeral and have a man proselytizing to you on a bus is actually excellent preparation for seeing Disobedience. Like, I kind of nailed that. I really like that one, too. Are you a fan?
I am. Yeah, I will say that, you know, it's not a direct correlation, but I will say it made me uncomfortable because I, you know, grew up Mormon and one of these very prescriptive religions where... Similarly, it tells you these are your like three options in life.
Yeah.
So when they had those scenes of like, well, but you have to do this now, or, you know, why aren't you married? Or, you know, all these like typical questions because there's only a couple different lanes you can get in.
Like married, be part of the church, create an Oscar website.
And... So that part of it was a little uncomfortable because it was a little close to home because I have had, or many years ago now, but I did live through many conversations like that.
Mm.
So, you know, wondering why you can't just get in the lane and stay in the lane.
Yep.
So in that way, I completely was really into Rachel Weisz's performance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was excellent. And I'm not always with her as an actor. But I was really into her in that movie. I definitely liked her more than anybody else in the cast. Which I understand is not how people are reacting to it.
Does that mean that you didn't really care for other people in the cast, or you just liked her the best?
Just that I liked her the best.
Okay.
Like, to me it was more complex than what other people were doing, even though I thought everybody was good in it.
Yeah. I feel like it's starting to feel like a distant memory, but I know there was a whole period where it felt like, well, if you can't get Kate Winslet or can't afford her or she's busy, you ask Rachel Weisz. And now I would rather watch Rachel Weisz for sure. And I liked everybody in that movie. And it was a total, I saw it again a couple weeks ago because I taught it in that film group that I lead. And that was a total seer againer in a way that I had not anticipated. Like, there was even more to talk about than I had thought the first time.
Well, this is a great question because it's becoming like a little sidebar on the podcast. What did the ladies in your film group think of it?
They loved it for the most part. Really loved it. I think of the 35 women who are in the group right now, I think... maybe all of them except 5 or 6 are Jewish. Many of them reformed and pretty secular. A couple of them conservative. None of them Orthodox, although there were like painful stories about family connections to Orthodoxy that several women felt like had really cost them important relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a ton to talk about there. But this weird thing happened where, like, so we had to talk about that for a while, which was really interesting. But then they would say, like, you know, but I don't think any of them are gay. And they said, but, you know, I was thinking about you, Nick, so much because it was such an incredible Love is Love movie. And I could only assume that really meant something to you. And I was like, okay, well, I see like 500 LGBT movies a year and I like this one. And I was thinking that there are almost no movies that actually take religion seriously and value that the characters care about their faith, whether or not it's working out easily for them or not. And so I was thinking about you guys. You know, so we had this really interesting two-way conversation. But yeah, I like that movie so much. And thought it might be the kind of thing you maybe overvalue at the end of a long festival. But it really held up.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And one of the things I enjoyed it is similar to one of the things I enjoyed about Tully, in that both of them, I thought, took really and made really interesting choices about what they didn't tell us, and that we just had to sort of glean.
Yeah.
From the performances. And I'm thinking especially of sort of backstory.
Yeah.
Where you sort of have to fill in what these relationships or marriages are like. And I prefer that so much as a moviegoer, but it's really, in some ways, a lost art.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of movies seem to exist as, like, the characters didn't exist before the movie started, and their story ends when the movie ends. So you don't really, it's just like so tied up that you don't really think of what you've missed.
Yeah.
And then other times the opposite approach, which just as many movies do, is to try to tell you everything. Like just constantly exposition about what has gone down.
Or like increasingly make a whole new movie or three to fill in what they apologize yes. for not having told you before. Like,
yeah. Did I tell you how I got my last name?
Yeah, right, exactly. So you won't have guessed this, but I was born at a certain point, and that looks like this.
Yeah, so anyway, I really liked that about Disobedience, because the ending, like, I don't want to go too much into the ending of either of those movies, Disobedience right. or Tully, because I do hope they seem like small enough movies that people are still catching up with them.
Yep.
But Disobedience has this very sort of warm moment in an otherwise very sort of fraught finale.
Yes.
And it just made my heart swell, because I suddenly felt transported back to when all the lead characters were young.
Yeah.
Even though they have really, really not given us many details about their youth. So that all came from just sort of like suggestion and performance nuance, and then this culmination of a story I didn't even know was there, or at least I didn't know that I knew.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And you know how you're, well, I'll speak for myself. I'm occasionally embarrassed by having forgotten like a fairly major dimension of the plot of a movie I'm watching. And in this case, I forgot that there are characters in this movie who aren't allowed to touch each other.
Yes.
And it didn't occur to me until the second time I was watching it that that was part of the whole point of the scene that you're talking about, because there was so much to react to, but also still have questions about, that my mind was not even in the obvious place.
Yeah.
It reminded me of when I saw Maria Full of Grace and I forgot that she was pregnant, because there was already so much going on with her that, like, two-thirds of the way into the movie, I was like, oh my God, right, shit, what is she going to do? And my friend was like, literally no woman ever has forgotten that she was pregnant. Like, you are a boy for sure.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I loved the music in Disobedience.
I did too. I'm glad you mentioned that. I wrote that down when I was when I got home, when I jot down a couple notes usually when I get home.
And it turns out the guy is, maybe everybody listening knows this, but is like an EDM musician, and that is a completely weird score for him to have written, but there you go. And yeah, that was one of my favorite things about it. The sex scene is great.
Okay, I have a personal story, and the second cocktail is helping. So
Okay.
I went to see Disobedience with this guy that I'm sort of seeing.
Okay.
And he left during the sex scene.
Because he was uncomfortable?
It was a bathroom run, but I was like, of all the scenes to leave
How much
during.
pee do you have? Yeah.
And I was a little thrown because then, those horrible moments when you do have to leave a movie theater, like the call of nature is too strong, which I fight against with all my might. Like, I rarely leave movie theaters.
I
But
only did it once, and I
what?
came back for Gamora. I left once to go pee. I couldn't stand it. And I came back, and 5 minutes later, the movie burned in the projector. And I was like, okay, I hear you. I won't do that again. That's 100% true. Anyway,
Yeah,
sorry.
I almost like it's super rare. Like at most once a year, but probably not even that.
Yeah.
And but if that ever happens, I leave during something that I feel like is going to be like a lazy filler scene.
Yeah.
But how can you leave during a sex scene? So anyway, I just wanted to share that because usually
That
when
would raise a
someone
flag.
Because usually, when someone comes back, if they've had a call of nature, you have to fill them in.
Yeah.
But in this case, I was just kind of like, I lean over and I'm like, yeah. And then I went back to the
Yeah. It was incredible.
They did something that I did not expect to see in a sex scene,
Yeah.
but I didn't share that. I just kept it to myself.
That was your private thing.
Apparently.
I've read tons and tons of interviews about that movie because of getting ready to lead that conversation. And it was so interesting listening to them talk about how storyboarded that sex scene was. And how conscious they were of, like, when you were saying before, like, how much the story is premised on really not telling you a lot that you might expect to know, or sometimes you haven't even been told things that you've started to act as if you know them and you actually kind of don't. And there's so much in that sex scene that you feel like you're seeing but don't. Like, I absolutely remembered it from Toronto as those women are naked, and they never once are. Or, like, Rachel Weisz kind of campaigning to not be in the frame during Rachel McAdams's orgasm because she felt like it's important that the audience doesn't actually know what I'm doing or not doing. That's part of how that happens. But also, this is all about Essie and so much less about Ronit. And, I'm the producer, whatever, but I think I shouldn't be here. And
Interesting.
yeah. And all the collaboration that she did with Sebastian Lelio, she told this hilarious story about just volunteering to one journalist. Like, part of why he was the first director I sent this to was because I'd seen Gloria and I think she'd heard about Fantastic Woman being still in
Before it was
production.
out, type of
Yeah.
thing. Yeah, okay.
And she said, like, the fact that he's so interested in marginalized women seemed perfect. And I really was thinking about how Ang Lee was perfect for Sense and Sensibility. And I thought having somebody not from the UK and not from Judaism might be really helpful to this story. It had not even occurred to me that he might be straight. How does a straight guy make Gloria and a fantastic woman? And then when we met, and I'm completely assuming that one thing he'll at least be able to bring to this is like some experience of queerness. And he's like, oh, no. What?
I'm actually having, you can't see my face, but I'm having a meltdown. Like, Sebastian Lelio, who I've met, is straight?
Totally straight.
Wow. I never would have guessed that.
That's what she's saying.
Especially with that filmography.
I know.
It just goes to show you. Artistry is mysterious.
Indeed.
So maybe we should mention movies that we did not enjoy from this first section of the year.
I thought On Chesil Beach was pretty terrible.
I have yet to see that one.
Kind of across the board. Not a finest hour for anybody in front of or behind the camera. Like, anybody.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
Yeah. And Saoirse Ronan, at the end of the movie, has to play a woman who's, like, in her late 70s.
Oh, no. So
good luck with that.
That's always trouble.
It's Saoirse Ronan. I mean, I don't want to turn that into, like... It's kind of turning into the American Sniper dead baby of that movie. Like, there's so much else to talk about, and in this case, so much else that's bad, well before you've gotten to the catastrophic age makeup, but... I couldn't find
it. She's, like, 23.
She's, like, 23. And I get it that there's, like, a whole discourse of, like, but the audience will have trouble if it's not the same actor. Like, well, that doesn't look like the same actor. And the audience is having trouble for sure. Like, just cast an older person.
Yeah.
Or at
some point, that works well if you have to have that scene with the older version of the character. One thing that I think works really well is using the voice of the original actor.
Yeah.
It does something to you while you're watching this new actor.
Or we could slip a note to Ian McEwan at one point and say, you don't always have to end with a flash forward to the old age. Like, there are other ways that
to
it could
end a story. Yes.
Yeah. So that was a bust.
I don't know if I was having a masochistic moment. I went and saw Deadpool 2.
Oh, honey. Is that why you're on your second cocktail?
I thought the first one was glib and annoying, but at least kind of funny and new in very, if I felt very generous.
Yeah.
Whereas this was just awful, and it was so hypocritical, and it was so gleeful about, like, the utter mayhem, and then tries to graft this morality on top of it about, like, don't become a bad person, don't become a murderer,
don't become a murderer.
That was the whole plot, trying to save this teenage kid, a guy from the future, like, don't let him become a murderer. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? In Deadpool, where everyone gleefully murders each other and they make jokes about it.
I like the idea of murdering each other.
Well, you can see, the thing is, you can in that movie because Deadpool always comes back to life.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just say I hated it.
I completely believe you.
And the other one, I hate would be too strong a word for this one, but I thought that Ready Player One was actively bad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So those were, like, the two, like, blockbusters where I was like, nope.
Nope. Hard pass.
Yeah. And I was really trying with Ready Player One because I didn't want to have preconceived notions that you can't make a good movie about that, for example.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought it was lazy and ugly looking, and I just did not like it.
I think that first chase that then turns into, like, the replayed chase where he gets the second shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was all really exciting and kind of cool, and that tided me over for a lot of nonsense. And then I was so tired that I didn't really feel like I had any credibility to pronounce on the movie more than that. So I wound up feeling kind of like you're like a little annoyed by it as it went on. And it did seem like tacky in the extreme, like in that Wreck-It Ralph way. I didn't like anybody in it.
I'm like, what do you do with those type of characters who aren't characters? I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there have been There have been some rough patches, but thankfully really good movies too, like Isle of Dogs and Disobedience, and I really enjoyed Love, Simon, but I feel like we've talked about that enough on the blog.
And then, as I like halfway in the middle, I could not work up much of a reaction to Let the Sunshine In. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that yet, but I'm happy it did well because, I like it when important filmmakers get imported, you know.
Yeah.
I find people's have reactions to it have been really interesting. Just the sort of the confusion people seem to be having about like processing that Claire Denis would make something gossamer and like fluffy.
Yeah. And then the even weirder fact that they seem confused that Juliette Binoche would do that. It's like Juliette Binoche is in like six movies a year. She's been in every genre 500 times. She was in Godzilla. Like she was in that rom-com where she just slept in the airport the whole time. Like there's nothing she's not going to be in.
And Gossamer is pretty easy for her. She's pretty good at it.
Yeah. Nails it. It has a really, really good ending. It's one of those movies that I was like, this is fine through the whole thing. And like the last 5 minutes were just so awesome.
Oh, that makes me happy because sticking the landing is such an underappreciated skill.
Yes. And another movie that grew on me steadily, after I thought I didn't like it at the beginning, and also a movie where I thought of you sort of constantly, and I think that was the right thing to do, was the Grace Jones documentary.
Oh,
Did you see that?
I did not. Now I'm feeling guilty about skipping it.
I feel like I don't think that you're a fan.
No, I am. I just, it was never playing some place convenient to me, and I don't remember what it opened opposite, but I just didn't make it.
That just didn't happen, and it's not still playing.
But I will
I haven't
catch it
done
for
any of the.
sure on DVD.
I feel like you'll love it. And I still don't know why all of it was filmed 10 years ago and it's only now coming out. And the beginning has a pretty intense hump to get over in terms of like you just can't hear the sound very well. And it just seems like an access documentary that is way rougher even than what you're expecting. And it was like, how am I going to find a way into this? And it's not expository at all. And it all happens within 12 months as she's, you don't even know this from the movie that she's like recording a new album and going on tour for the first time in a while. Like that's implied, but the movie doesn't tell you a fucking thing. It's sort of like, I'm Not Your Negro is not how you're going to learn about James Baldwin. You just have to like be in him for a while. But once you make that turn, the movie is so good. And when the movie starts, the first credit is to the director, and the second credit is to the hat designer, and that completely makes sense.
MVP.
Totally.
That's amazing. Is which record was that? Is that the Corporate Cannibal record that it's about?
Yeah, the 2008 one.
Okay.
I don't think she did that song during the movie, but they're making the point that this is the first one where she's really singing about Jamaica and reconnecting with roots, and
Okay.
she's there a lot in the movie. And you realize that she's singing about her family a lot on that album. But yeah, it's quite a show. And I saw it at midnight with like a whole sort of like middle-aged bunch of strangers who meant, I mean, I only know a little bit of Grace Jones's like back catalog, but these people had it down pat and they were having a blast, which was the perfect way to watch it.
Yeah. I feel like I've disappointed you missing all these movies.
That's okay. That's why we're checking in.
I'm trying to catch up. Oh, well, we're out of time. Oh, we didn't even talk about Book Club.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. We'll save that till next time.
Okay, that'll hold up. I don't think book club will ever age or date.
I just think, I just so you know, you don't. I know you like to be a conscientious critic, but you do not actually have to read all of the 50 Shades book before seeing the movie.
Oh, all right. Well, then I can throw them away.
Because they're the book club. Let's just say that book club, you would never want to be a part of it, even if you love the movie.
Okay.
They say about one sentence about every book that they read. I was
That's
like, that
plenty.
is not like any book club I've ever been to.
That's like most of the book clubs I've ever been to. Way to go on finding better ones. I'll wrap this up with a 1994 question that's also a birthday question for you.
Okay.
I might posit that Michelle Pfeiffer was never more beautiful than in Wolf in 1994. Agree or disagree? I feel like this is an opinion about her that I've never heard you register. When did she look the most exquisite?
And this is because there is no answer to that question because she has never not looked exquisite.
Totally stipulated.
Because every time I try to pinpoint that, I'll think of like an image, and then I'll realize the images are from like 3 different decades or whatever.
Yeah, fair.
But I think you could, I think Wolf is one, if you had to pick like 4 times she's looked the most beautiful, it would be up there.
Okay.
Because it's also a movie where she's not, there's not a lot of character work with sort of like hair and makeup and clothes. So it's just sort of her face unvarnished.
Yeah.
And in that way, perfect.
Yeah. Have you seen that since it was out? I haven't.
I have.
What a weird movie.
Yeah, I also saw that with somebody I was dating who knew of my Pfeiffer.
Well, I hope that person didn't go to the bathroom.
They did not. They supported my fandom.
Especially during the memorable scene in that movie when one character goes to the bathroom on another of the characters.
Well, considering how often you forget entire plots of movies, congratulations on remembering that scene.
Thank you. Well, this has been a fun soiree.
It has, and you people don't know listening that you were totally sick this morning, so somehow
I'm totally sick now, but you're restorative in some way.
that's great. The power of cinema.
The power of cinema. I'm going to get back to watching BPM, which I'm teaching as the last movie in my class on Tuesday.
Fun. What is, where does it, why is it the last movie in the syllabi?
The course was about gender and sexuality in movies from the last 3 years, and I tried to hook all of the movies onto characters who are not too far from the ages of my students.
Okay.
And I ended with a few movies that I thought were interesting because they were about kind of communities of people. We started with some kind of loners. And so last week was was Tangerine and the Fits. And BPM, I think, is like, for all, as sad as it is, I hope it's a great movie to show student age people about solidarity and activism and banding together.
All
We'll see.
I'm thinking right now is I wish I could have gone to your class about the fits.
They loved it.
It's
I
so
was so
under
surprised.
discussed and it's so
I know.
short and economical and perfect.
Yeah. And like kind of mystifying to me the first time I mean, it's mystifying anyway, but it was one of those movies like kind of like I felt about Mulholland Drive the first time I saw it. I loved it, but I truly did not understand it. And the more times you see it, you kind of wonder why you were so confused the first time. And the fits gets easier as time goes on, but yeah, so good.
Yes, yeah, so anybody listening, if you have not seen The Fitz, I think it's streaming, or at least it has been in the past. And it's very, very good and very underseen.
And
And
speaking
like
of
70 minutes long, something crazy like that.
like 70 minutes long.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed our meandering conversation. And
talk to y'all again soon.
We will. Wait, are you going to see Book Club? Can we talk about it later?
I mean, if you're assigning it to me, if that's the other thing you want for your birthday, then yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised you haven't seen it yet. I'm just going to throw that out there. Jane Fonda, Diane Keaton. Have you no loyalty to these people?
It does kind of feel like my peer group.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.